Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Precision Rifle Media. This week we've got Chad Weister with us from Vortact Barrels. I got the hookup with Vortact through, if you've ever listened to the shows with my buddy Garrett Fravert or Ken Wheeler, they both have dealt with Vortact in the past. Actually, Garrett's still there, I guess, but we all know that Ken is now the head of the PRS. He bought the PRS, so he's out doing that, which is awesome, but we're going to hammer out some of the black magic maybe that goes into barrel making. The interesting thing with Vortact is that I'm going to let Chad clear this up, but I'm going to give you my understanding quick, is they make all the stuff that makes the barrels. And so then they were like, I guess we'll just make barrels too. And so they are a lot of experience with that kind of thing. And they thought, well, we'll just start doing it. And they're doing pretty good work. Chad, you want to introduce yourself quick, who you are, what you do at Vortact, and then we'll, you can correct me.
Yeah. No, thanks, Kirk. My name is Chad Weister and I'm the director of Vortact. And you were very close on kind of where we got started and the family of brands that we're in. So the parent company of Vortact is Entrust, and we also have Unisig under that umbrella. And Unisig builds gun drilling, reaming, and rifling machines. And where Vortact came from 5, 6, 7 years ago was we were developing machines and installing machines in a lot of the big firearm OEMs. And we had a lot of customers, smaller customers, asking us if we could make barrels for them. So we're like, well, maybe, you know. And we kind of set up a couple machines that we just could do short production runs on of barrels. And they kept asking, and then it turned into something that had a business case. And we created the brand, and now it's a full-time division. So it's kind of exciting. But yeah, we're machine tool guys, and that's where we came from, and that's kind of how we started.
Awesome. So that kind of knocks out my first question. How did Vortact start? What's Vortact? Is that just a cool name, or is there something behind it?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a story behind it. Tact is a German word, and I could maybe not get this 100% correct, but it's tack time. So, you know, how often is a car coming off the assembly line is tack time. So it has to do with production, and we kind of liked that name, to tell you the truth. So we wanted to find a full name that had that in it. And Vortex, is rotation. And so gun drilling, the big thing with gun drilling is rotation and counter rotation. So kind of a vortex. So smash those together, you get Vortact, and kind of a cool, strong brand, cool name. And that's where it came from.
Awesome. Yeah, it is cool. How did you get started in this side? Are you part of the parent company, or did you just come in as Vortact, or?
Yeah, good question. No, I've actually been with the parent company for almost 15 years. And I started out in machine design. So 10 years of machine design, well, 8 to 10 years of machine design. And then I was kind of doing a lot of the machine design for the firearms machines, you know, the gun drilling, the reaming, the rifling machines, and doing project management and kind of doing business development, and was working with those customers. So I was getting those questions about, hey, could you guys maybe make some barrels for us? So it kind of was a natural segue into kind of running this brand. So that's kind of how I grew into this. And then now we're up to 20, 25 employees on the barrel side. You know, in total, we're about 100 employees with the machines and the barrels, but
sure,
it's become about 25% of our business, 20 to 25% of our business, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a fair amount, really. I mean, for something that's, I don't want to say just starting out, but it's not, you know, the flagship, right?
Yeah. It grew fast. You know, we've had a lot of growth in the last 5 years. But you could tell there was a need for it in the market. So we've kind of filled that hole.
So Vortex out of Wisconsin. Are you from, right. You're from Wisconsin? Are you from further?
I am. I'm from, I mean, maybe based on my accent, I'm from Rylander, so northern Wisconsin.
Yeah. I did some transmission pole work up there maybe 8-10 years ago. It's always colder up in Rhinelander.
It is. They're right on the edge of the kind of the lake effect snow. I was just up there last weekend snowmobiling all the way up in the UP, but there's just it's a different world up there. But I'd say I'd go back, but this business kind of is wrapping me up here.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to get back to those kind of places when you got, you know, when you start looking at jobs and stuff, you know. So, all right, real quick. So you guys do the whole deal, right? You guys, okay, here's actually, before we get into that, you guys don't sell direct to customer anymore.
Or right.
Never, probably.
So we never have. Yeah. Yep. Yep. That's why, you know, not a lot of people know about us because we don't sell direct. And that's kind of part of who we are and what we do. So there's a selling point to our customers for that. You know, we're never competing with our customers because we don't sell direct.
Yeah. So like if you had some kind of an OEM, you know, and you needed 200, 800, 900 barrels, whatever the numbers are, thousand, whatever the numbers are, that's the kind of customers you guys deal with. It's not onesie twosies, you know, PRS shooters that call direct. So,
right.
That's kind of first things first, I guess, before people get too excited and start running, trying to buy a barrel or two, you know?
Yeah. The funny thing is a lot of our barrels are out there and probably in a lot of people's firearms and they don't even know it.
Yeah. Right.
Because, you know, we also, our customers, usually when they get our barrels, they brand it as their own barrel, not a Vortec barrel, just because we don't have that direct to consumer presence. So.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. It's kind of a neat thing, right? It's kind of be like the silent professional kind of.
Yeah, we kind of have a tagline: the best barrels you can't get. You know.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. You can. You just gotta.
Yeah, yeah.
So, go ahead.
Oh, but yeah, we do everything. You know, we pretty much start with raw material and we take it all the way to a finished barrel, and that's all done at the facility in Wisconsin. So we've bought you know, $700,000 stress relief furnace, you know, and then a ton of turning capacity, and then a lot of the Unisig drilling, reaming, and rifling machines, and then a lot of automation. So we do everything in house.
So I know something that me and you talked about a little bit on the phone prior to this was kind of we talk about the black magic and barrel making, right? Like everybody's got a way, and you know, there's a lot of good barrel makers out there now, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that, but what can we kind of try and get some of that voodoo out of there? Maybe can you kind of break it down into like what you guys have found that makes a good barrel? Like, you know, well,
yeah,
on a Unisig machine is good.
Yeah. Well, I have learned a lot about it, you know. I mean, and I didn't start out as like a barrel maker or necessarily, you know, a gun guy per se. I mean, I'm a hunter, you know, so I use rifles for hunting, but they were always just a tool. You know what I mean? Oh, I didn't care what ammo I used, things like that.
Yeah. So you're from Rhinelander and you deer hunt? Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like in school, you automatically get the days off for rifle season.
Yeah.
and so I never got deep into shooting. I just thought, okay, I can shoot a 2-inch group and that's about as good as I am, you know. But you then learn later that, well, that ammo is never going to shoot better than that, you know. But yeah, to your point about the black magic, it was interesting because, you know, again, we're machine tool builders. That's kind of in our DNA. And I've got an engineering background. And so we kind of took that approach to it, like concentricity, straightness, surface finish, you know, all tool life. We kind of took that approach, more of a machinist approach to barrel making. And we found that, you know, that all works out, right? If you have good material, stable material, it doesn't have stress. So that's what you start with. And you line it up well with the gun drilling machine. So concentricity in the gun drilling machine. And then you have a good sharp tool, a gun drilling tool, which is going to make the first hole, of course, in the barrel. And you use counter rotation and you use high pressure coolant. And the machine alignment is good. Well, you start out with a really straight hole. So that's a very good starting point. And then it kind of segues into the other thing.
Let's talk about that quick. Just speaking of a really straight hole, right? A lot of people, I think, I think in the PRS world, people that buy a lot of barrels that are kind of in the know, I think they understand that none of the holes are perfectly straight, right? But can you kind of hit on that a little bit? Like what would be maybe normal to see for like a deflection in the hole or whatever? Like obviously the straighter the better, right? But like what's normal? How do you know?
Well, it's really tough to measure true straightness in a hole. One thing that is easy to measure is you check the hole relative to the OD on both ends of the barrel. So that's entrance runout, you know, where the tool enters, and that's exit runout. Those two things are really easy to measure. You can do that in a bench center with an indicator. So that tells you, that gives you a pretty good indication of how straight that hole is. So we've found that if you use counter rotation and all those things I talked about, you get a really straight hole. That all being said, you could have perfect concentricity on both ends or close to perfect, let's say 3 thou on entrance and 8 thou on exit. And if you turn the outside of that, contour the outside of that true, and then you cut that, you know, by turning concentric, I mean you pick up on the bore on both ends. So you have, in a lathe, you have like a face driver with a center, and then you have a center in the tailstock. And you have that OD perfectly true to both of those ends. And then you cut it up in the middle, you'll still see 4 to 5 thou runout. So no matter what, it always seems to be, there's a little bit of a bow in that barrel, in that hole. So I guess to answer your question, there's 2 to 3 thou of a banana kind of always in there at best case from what I've seen. But if you can get that concentricity good, that's going to be a very straight hole. So if that concentricity is off, let's say in that gun drilling machine, you're only rotating the tool. Some of the older machines, it only rotates the tool, or it only rotates the workpiece, the barrel. Your runout's going to be much higher and your straightness is going to be much worse. And I've been into some of the older.
Now, when you say much worse, I mean, what's much worse? I mean, so, we're not talking a half inch, you know, but what?
No, what's but, much? Let's say I was saying 3 thou on the entrance, 8 thou on the exit runout, that you end up, of course you contour that out, but that 8 thou, I mean, it could be 50 thou. If you don't use a good tool, a good gun drill, you don't have a good gun drill bushing. So the bushing, which starts out that gun drilling tool into that raw material, and you don't use counter rotation, or you're not flushing the chips like you should. If you're not doing all those things, you can have 50 thou. So straightness of that hole is going to kind of go with that runout. So, you know, but the finished product, so the barrel that the consumer sees, is trued up. You know, they're still picking up on those bores and they're still truing it up, but you don't really know what the middle of that hole is doing.
Sure.
And stress.
And that's where you see guys when they dial them in on a lathe, they use those bore guides or those bore rods or whatever to kind of true the bore up as much as they can when they go to cut the chambers.
Right. But you're still only, you know, you're still only working with the very end of the barrel, you know?
Right.
So yeah, and the other thing that we've seen, you know, kind of part of that black magic, but if there's stress in that material, when you go and you put it between centers after it's been rifled and everything, and you go to contour it, if there's stress in that material and you turn it down, it'll bow. It'll relax and it'll bow, and then obviously the bore is going to go right with that and have that same bow in there. So stress is another big thing. You know, I've tried stainless from maybe 8 or 10 different mills, and I've found certain mills that don't move much or might rifle better. And now, is that the alloying elements that are in the material, or is that how they're heat treating it, or is that how they're hardening it? I think that all comes into play.
Sure. Yeah, that all makes sense. And then you said you got a furnace, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so kind of to step back a little bit, we happen to use button rifling. So button rifling is probably the most popular process to rifle barrels. And when you're button rifling, that it's a carbide tool that gets pulled through the reamed hole, that puts stress in the barrel because you're essentially cold forming that material, cold forming the rifling in that barrel. And if you don't stress relieve it and you go to turn it, and let's say you turn a taper in there, whatever kind of taper you put on the outside, the bore will move more in the area that you turn more of. So where you have less wall thickness, it'll grow more. And on the chamber end where you don't cut as much, it'll stay about that same size. So you have to stress relieve it to take any of that stress out so that when you turn it, it stays uniform all the way through. So, there's a lot of not tricks, but there's common sense things like when you put the barrel in the furnace, it should be vertical. Things like that all make a difference when you're trying to get the most accuracy out of it.
So are these contoured before they're rifled?
No,
Okay.
nope.
The way
And
you
the
explained
reason.
that, it made it sound like that you did, but that would be kind of goofy because, like you said, you'd have less, there'd be more movement, right?
Yeah, the main reason why you can't, because actually it would be great if you could make a pistol barrel and then rifle it last, because you could make that pistol barrel almost finished on like a Swiss machine or a multi-axis machine, and then you could just rifle it. And a lot of times they are through a broach process, but button rifling, because of that cold forming, you have to have a uniform wall thickness all the way through. Otherwise, your size won't be uniform all the way through. So you kind of have to, you have to gun drill it first, and then you ream that gun drilled hole, and then you rifle it.
Sure. You don't have a gun drill sitting there, do you?
Behind me? No.
No, I mean like just the bit. There's...
Oh, no, I don't. Sorry.
Nah,
Should
just
I?
people don't know. It's, you think about drilling a
Yeah.
hole and you think of a twist drill, right? But these are kind of, they're goofy looking if that's what you're picturing, right? And then you show them a gun drill, they're...
Yeah, it doesn't look like a twist drill. It doesn't look like a conventional twist drill. And actually, the center of it is not in the middle. It's actually one quarter of the diameter. And it's really long, So yeah, they are unique. And back to the black magic and the process. So it's gun drilling, reaming, rifling. The reaming process is really, really important to clean up that bore from gun drilling, and any tool marks. Or anything you see in a barrel, like I know a lot of people have bore scopes and everything now. Anything you see in there, any of those tool marks are typically all coming from that reamer. And it's one of the worst processes in barrel making because it's kind of inconsistent, which is too bad.
Yeah, so when you go to ream it, is it just a big pull-through reamer type deal that twists, or is it, how's that work?
So gun drilling is a forward process. You're pushing that tool all the way through, and that gets you your hole. The reaming process is just going to follow that gun drilled hole, but it's going to take about six thou out, 3 thou per side, and it's a pull process. So it looks similar to a chamber reamer. Some people might know what that looks like, but it looks like a chamber reamer, but it doesn't have. It's just got uniform flutes,
Just
and
straight.
it just straight, yeah, and it pulls right through. But you need high pressure oil to go through it to flush the small chips out. So essentially, you almost have a gun drilling machine that's set up for pull reaming.
Have you seen those pull-through chamber reamers?
I have. I think Dave Kipp of PTG was telling me about them too. I've never used them though.
No, it seems like a neat idea. Looks like kind of. I know this isn't your specialty or whatever, but it looks like they kind of you pull it through and then like normally, you kind of got to peck and measure or whatever. You got a CNC and you set it and it runs and whatever. But this looks like you just kind of run it in and when it stops, it's headspace.
Yeah,
I
I think
mean,
he. I,
for to make it easy, but
yeah, yeah. I guess I have seen some of those where they have a bigger shoulder for chambering. But well, I mean we're doing a lot more chambering, so it's that's got its own black magic, right? That we're kind of or it's an onion that we're peeling away. But there's things about chambering that are important, especially when you're trying to, you know, I think a lot of the guys in the PRS world or gunsmithing world, they're kind of setting up to do 1 to 5. Well, we're setting up, getting ready, and then we got to run 2,000, which is right. A little bit different animal, you know. But they got to really be almost just as good as if you're just setting up to do 1 or 2.
Right. Just a lot of times over and over. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just time is money.
You know, it is.
Boy, that, you know, kind of hits on a couple of questions that I had here. So you did talk about button rifling. You guys only button rifle?
Yeah, we do offer cut rifling as well. It's just a very laborious process, so we don't really do a ton of it. A cut rifle barrel can take about a half an hour to make one barrel. Button rifle barrel, you can do in about 30 seconds. So, you know, the one machine that we have that's set up that can do cut rifling can also button rifle. So it's pretty busy button rifling. but I guess one good thing to talk about would be the different rifling processes.
Yeah.
So like I say, button is probably the most popular in the world for making barrels. You know, most all, I'd say 80% of the barrels out there are button rifled.
Yeah. So my take on it, you got a big long rod and a little button, if you will, on the end, right? Your cutter that looks, It looks like maybe like if you've seen the stickers of like an AR-15 bolt head, you know, with all the little deals coming off it.
I think
kind of like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's got the locking lugs coming off it or whatever. You know, they got the pictures of it. You see the stickers and stuff on trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically you're pulling that through and you set the machine to twist however many revolutions per inch you want. Right.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I sometimes explain it as it almost looks like a football. So the carbide almost looks like a football, and then it's got the negative of the land in ground in it. And then, yeah, it's a driven head on the machine that you pull that button on a big long rod. So the rod of the button is really important because surprisingly, it takes a lot of force to pull that carbide through the barrel. One little secret that I've learned is that the more load you put on it, the better barrel you have, because the more forming you're doing with that button, the better it kind of fills in everywhere, and it's actually a better barrel. But you get to a point where you start breaking things if you take it too far. Like a typical American, we take everything to the point where it breaks, then we say, okay, let's back that off 10%.
Yeah.
But that's button rifling. And then the lube is a really important part of that process as well. So you try a lot of different lubes till you get to a point where you find one that's got the best friction coefficient and pulls through. So that's button rifling. Cut rifling, maybe a few people are more familiar with that, but that's a small little hook that essentially takes a sliver of a chip. I guess to back up, button rifling takes no chips. It's 100% cold forming. Cut rifling, you take a small sliver of a chip, really only a tenth of an inch every pass, and you're only cutting one groove every pass. So the machine's got to stroke all the way through that barrel, let's say 30 times or whatever, to get to the depth you want, 30 or 40 times just per groove. Now you have to do, if it's 4 groove, of course you got to do 4 times all the way around, taking a tenth every time. And so that's where all the time comes in. And typically you have to measure after you take, you know, 80% of the passes, you got to measure it and check to see where you're at, and then you tell the machine, okay, I want to do, you know, 10 more passes to get to my size. So you almost need, an experienced machinist running that all the time. But the barrels are really, really nice. There's no stress, so they don't need to be stress relieved. We find that they don't move as much, as far as the groove in the bore doesn't move as much after contouring. So there's definitely value in cut rifling. It's just, it takes a really long time, you know.
Yeah, and that's where you see the costs go up on cut rifle, right? And
it does.
I wonder how much of a I'm sure I could just look it up, I guess, but you know, I've had a lot of button rifle barrels that shot really, really well. And I've had a lot of cut rifle barrels that shot really well. And, I guess I don't get too hung up on it, but the cut rifle seems to be the gold standard, right, of the PRS. You think that's,
yeah.
What's your take on that?
Well, you know, when I'm doing testing and I test a cut barrel and I test a button barrel, it's really hard to see a difference, especially when you're using, let's say, ELDM type ammo, you know, factory ammo. Usually don't see a difference. I mean, especially like in a 6 Creedmoor or something like that. It's really hard to tell. So I can't say that a cut barrel is that much better. I don't think it's like 50% better or anything like that than a button barrel. But I think there's definitely a confidence factor that comes with a cut barrel. I think everybody thinks that they're a lot better, but when I'm talking about a comparable button barrel, I'm talking, we have different performance series, but we call it our 400 series barrel, but that's a lead lapped button rifle barrel. So that's kind of our highest end button barrel. You wouldn't want to take kind of a non lead lap button barrel and compare it to a cut barrel. But if you talk about the highest end button barrel, I really don't see a difference with that in a cut barrel.
Sure. Now, talking about pulling that tool through, you know, takes a lot of force, you say, squeezing that thing through there, that creates heat. What kind of a difference do you think you get between the first barrel and the 300th barrel?
With that tool?
Yeah.
Surprisingly, the tool actually breaks in a little bit. So the carbide has a coating on it, and that coating, you usually kind of buff it to give it even a slicker finish. But you actually find that the first couple pulls with that button are actually the hardest. And then it kind of smooths out and it actually gets a little bit easier to pull. And the corners aren't as sharp because it wears down the corners a little bit. So that button actually kind of gets easier to pull as you go. But one interesting thing about button rifling, barrel one to barrel 300, if you're using the same button and the same reamer, they'll be almost identical. You know, the size is going to be almost identical. The twist, everything is going to be pretty much identical. So it's very, very consistent.
Sure. Yeah. Have you noticed any, like, when you talked about materials, right? Have you noticed like some, maybe you say they take the rifling better or worse, but like what, how do I want to say this? Like, when they don't take the rifling, I mean, is there some spring back in there and you maybe get different bore diameters, or like if you took three different barrels from three different forges? And
yeah. Essentially the observations that I see, and it's more in stainless, because the interesting thing about chromoly vanadium, which is kind of the standard on like your 4150, your chromoly, it depends on how people say it, but essentially your steel barrel is all coming kind of from one mill. It's one mill in Michigan, in the U.S. But stainless, the 416R can come from, you know, domestic, Europe, all over. And I've tried some stuff from the U.S. because you want to stay domestic. And what happens on some of those lots of steel is it won't fill as well. So kind of what I was talking about before about putting as much load as you can into that button. Some of that stainless, either it doesn't have the tensile strength that other stainless has, but it doesn't fill as well. So essentially, if you pull the same button through that material as you would a different material, its size is bigger and it doesn't fill in as well. And you just don't get as good of a profile. The other thing that I've seen is that one mill material may move a ton more when we contour it. And that's a problem, you know. Typically you're trying to hold under 5 thou runout in the middle of that barrel if you're located on the ends. And if some of them are 3 and some of them are 8, well, that's not good because it's not consistent.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing that I like. You talk about the consistency of it a lot, right? And that's generally what we're looking for in this world, right? Is in shooting long range, you want it to be the same, every one to be the same, every shot to be the same, every speed to be the same, you know?
Right.
And so to hear you guys pay so much attention to the consistency of it, you're not just cranking out barrels. Yeah. Here's 1,000 for you. And here's 1,000 for you.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting thing about the rifling, so the barrel blank side of it and the consistency is, if you put a lap, so if you pour a lead lap in a barrel, and that's kind of what you do to lap the barrel, and you start pushing that back and forth through that barrel, through a button rifle barrel, you'll find high spots and low spots. And you keep working it, and you start taking those high spots and low spots out. And we've kind of found that keeping it as uniform and consistent all the way through is the best for accuracy. Which kind of makes sense.
What about polishing it too much? I've heard that be a problem too.
I guess I haven't really seen that cause an issue. So we use different, you can use different grit lapping compound on that lead lap, and that'll kind of change your surface finish inside the barrel. But usually that button leaves a pretty good finish. You know, you're better than a, typically better than a 16 RA finish. And when you go to lap it and you start using a finer compound, it's pretty smooth. But we really haven't seen where that causes an issue.
Yeah. The, wish I had a little bit more experience with that personally, but, I guess the issues you see, I believe they say it's got to do with, like pressures, right? And the bullet, grabbing to the sides of the barrel harder, right? Because there's no spot for anything to go.
Yeah. And I would, and I don't do as much shooting as our customers do. I really don't want, I should test more, to be honest, but,
you need a tester. I know a guy out in South Dakota.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even, you know, like you say, Garrett works for us. So, he's always ready to shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I think size may come into almost be a bigger factor in that. So like when we're sizing a barrel, a certain heat of material, heat lot of material, it's going to size different based on what button you use or in what reamer you use. So there's kind of a little bit of a recipe that you're building there. And, you know, you of course have a tolerance on your bore size and your groove size. So I would almost think that if you're running the groove too big or you're running the bore too big, maybe that would cause more pressure inconsistency or velocity, a difference in velocity from barrel to barrel.
Sure. So what about solids, shooting like a lathe turn solid?
That honestly, that'd be more of a Garrett question. Yeah. I don't have much experience with that at all.
I don't either. I just do what he tells me to.
Yeah.
This is the bullet you're shooting out of your 50. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets into the big stuff, you know, but.
Well, cool. Is there anything we didn't get a chance to talk about or hit on that you'd like to talk about before we just start getting further into the barrel world? Anything?
I guess one thing that we, you know, is a little bit different about us is, you know, because we're machine tool guys, we really put a lot of effort into automation. So that's kind of one thing that's different about us. And I'm not necessarily trying to sell or anything like that. I just, it's something that's a little bit unique that we're able to use automation and kind of define the process up front using engineering practices and then use automation to kind of scale. So we can, you know, do all the documentation up front, get a real stable process, and then set it in a cell and then let it run for 1,000 pieces, you know? So it's just something that is a little bit unique about what we do.
Sure. How small and how big do you guys go?
I mean, we'll go all the way down to 17 cal and then go all the way up to 50 cal. We can do bigger, we can do 3/4 inch holes and stuff like that, but that's not necessarily firearm related.
No. Well, I mean, depends on who's asking.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, true.
Yeah. So down to 17. So you do 22 rimfire barrels and stuff too, then if somebody was looking to.
Yeah. Yep. That's actually been really popular for us. You know, the AR market really dipped, you know, 3, 4, 5 months ago. It just really dipped. And so we had to kind of do something else, right? And Rimfire stuff was really popular. Rimfire barrels for NAR type platform, you know, or things like that, or, you know, Ruger, different platforms like that. But it's been a really growing side of what we're doing.
Yeah. See, well, with like the PRS 22 and the NRL 22, that's getting big, you know, and not everybody's making 22 barrels for the, you know, the Rimex or the Voodoo and all that, you know, I mean, you can get them made out of anything, I suppose, but it's nice to see somebody's kind of stepping up to the plate to make more of that stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We haven't done a ton of the Bolt platform Rimfire stuff yet, but I'm sure we will soon. But even like 8.6 Blackout, that we've been doing those, you know, 350 Legend, you know, so even 9mm rifle barrels, you know, for that type of platform was really popular. So just whatever is popular, we're making.
Yeah. So if somebody, let's say, what's like a minimum order if somebody were to want to buy a bunch?
Typically, like if you're talking a higher end button barrel for like a bolt gun, you know, 50 pieces is not uncommon, you know, 56.5 Creedmoor barrels or something like that, you know, that's not so uncommon. If you're talking AR barrels, it's typically in the, you know, 100 to 200 range are the minimums. Usually our customers get into blanket orders and then they're ordering kind of 1,000 at a time, or they'll order 1,000, they'll releases of 200 or 500.
So your AR barrels, you're making the receiver extensions and everything too?
We don't do the extensions right now, but we, you know, turn the barrels complete and everything. So our customers usually put the extension on, drill the gas port. So that's probably a good project for Garrett this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Here, set this machine up.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I was just wondering, like, you know, if you were building an accurate gun and you wanted the bolt matched to the extension or whatever, and how that would go, but you don't do that. So.
Yeah. Typically, you know, we can hold headspace pretty tight, even in high production. Once you set it, it doesn't really move, you know, with another thing that we're different, or how we're different, is we're using a twin turret, twin spindle machine with specialized tooling and everything, where we can almost throw a barrel blank in there and have a finished AR barrel come out. So because you're machining all ends of that barrel, headspace is going to be almost identical every single time, because you're cutting that face with that machine at that position, and then you're coming up with that chamber reamer and cutting to whatever depth. And then as soon as you get the first one qualified, the next one and the next 200 are going to be identical. So, you know, even as long as the barrel's extensions and the bolts are all made to a tight tolerance, everything lines up and usually is within a couple thou.
Yeah, I don't know. That stuff's crazy. I got an old lathe in the garage that. Yeah.
Yeah. These machines are tough. They're tough to program because you have multiple. You essentially have multiple machines in one machine, so they're very difficult to program. But once you get them set up and you get them running, you know, they're kind of lights out, and they just pound out barrels. We even use probes to. So we have probes that touch off on ODs, check what that OD is, make a change, and then the next part is perfect. You know, essentially it's hunting every single part for that perfect diameter. So for example, we're making a bunch of AK barrels right now, and AKs, you know, it's kind of a weird barrel because.
Well, and how perfect do they have to be?
Well, that's the thing. People want them very, very cheap, you know, inexpensive, I should say. And they want volume, but the diameters need to be really, really tight because there's certain press fits throughout that barrel, of course. So you're talking like 8/10, you know, plus or minus 4/10, you got to hold on multiple diameters across that barrel. And it's, hard to do. It's very hard to do in a lathe. I mean, you could grind, or in the past, I think they, you know, I've even talked to Russian guys about this, but they've matched barrels to parts. So they'd have like a group of parts that were, you know, plus 3/10, and then they have a group of parts that are minus 3/10. So they'd measure that barrel, find out, okay, this is the plus 3/10 size. I need that part from that bin. Whereas we have to just hold really, really tight tolerances so that the mating parts just fit perfect every time. And so with this new technology and probing and certain inserts and thermal compensation, so, you know, heat makes a difference. You know, you don't want the machine to be different in the morning than it is in the afternoon. All these things coming in, you can make a good AK barrel consistently, one setup all day long.
How customized can you guys get?
Well, that most everything we do, actually everything we do, is to a customer drawing. So even if it's we just did a job for some small 9mm pistol barrels, the guy sent us just kind of a napkin sketch, like almost literally a napkin sketch, and we took it into SolidWorks, created a drawing, and then sent it to him to get approved. And then sent him a first article. He approved that. And then now we're running production. So we don't really have a catalog of drawings that customers pick through, and then they pick this Vortec, you know, S1 profile, and that's the one that they're going to do. They almost always send us drawings, and we make it to a drawing.
So rifling contour and all that stuff, you can just whatever the drawing is, left hand gain twist. I want it straight for 4 inches, and then I want it to start twisting.
that might be a little bit tough. but yeah, and as far as the contour, you know, those all kind of come from a drawing. But as far as the rifling, 5R, 6R, 4R, 4-groove, 6-groove, you know, anything that's been popular in the last 6 years, essentially we have tooling for. You know, we have a ton of tooling.
What do you think the most popular rifling is?
Honestly, 223 6-groove. You know, it's just ARs. You know, you'd think, especially in the PRS world, you'd think it'd be like 6.5 5R, you know, but and we do a lot of that, of course, but with us only doing OEM accounts, they usually have a standard that they need, like certain bigger, you know, hunting type firearms. One of our customers, they can only have 6-groove on this platform, you know, or they can only have 4-groove on this platform, and it needs to be this groove width and everything. So we don't always have the it's not always our choice on what rifling profile we use. But you know, 5R, if it's our choice, we typically are going to look at 5R because we've seen it seems to be a touch more accurate. So
yeah, wasn't that developed out in Wisconsin? That Boots Obermeyer, wasn't he the guy that kind of came up with that?
I think so. I don't really know a ton of that history, but that's, I think, how it started.
I talked to him one time. I was going to try and have him on the show. He was like, "I'm old. I don't want to." I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah.
I only do barrels for people I know, and I don't want to talk to you anymore. Click.
Yeah, okay. I've never talked to him. I mean, I've talked to some of the other people in the Wisconsin area that are kind of the old school barrel makers, and those guys learn the hard way how to make really, really good barrels. So I've actually learned quite a bit from some of them, you know. And you know, you'd love to say that you take the engineering approach to everything, but some of it's like just learn the hard way, you know.
Yeah, well, you guys got a ton of barrel makers out in that area.
Yeah, they're all within like 45 minutes of us. And we didn't necessarily do that deliberately, of course, but and some of them, you know, a lot of them have been updating machines and getting a lot newer technology, but some of the old school ones are kind of happy with what they got.
Yeah, and they make good barrel. What kind of machine you got? Oh, it's a 1930 Pratt and Whitney, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, our barrels, so we just keep using it.
I know our Unison guys, you know, don't like me to say this, but you can make a good barrel on an old machine. You know, a lot of it is understanding the process. You know, it's just it's hard to make 1,000, you know? Yeah. I mean, you can definitely make a handful on old equipment. And if you have everything dialed in, you can make a really good barrel on there. But to count on it and to scale it is and run a business based off it, it's really tough.
Yeah, one-off stuff. I mean, you can, you know, you do a lot of stuff with a little, with knowledge, right? You can do a lot of stuff if you know how to use the stuff you got, but how fast can you, how many can you make? Yeah, I see that.
And even for us, labor is tough. I mean, it's hard to get, it's really hard to get good people right now, especially skilled trades. It's really tough. So, the more we can use technology to our advantage and use equipment, use automation, it only helps us out.
Yeah, it's like the old shapers, you know, they say you can make anything on a shaper but money, you know, because this is
yeah.
But they're cool at work, I'll tell you that. Talk about the old shapers, they like it's kind of keep hammering and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I still see old Pratt & Whitney machines out there. So those were World War II machines, you know, and that's what a lot of the old gun drilling machines and cut rifling machines were built by. They're built by Pratt & Whitney. And you still see them out there, and they can still make good parts. It's just, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah. well, right on. You guys got any plans to, like, get into supporting like the PRS type stuff? Or are you just going to keep doing what you're doing the way it is? Or what, I mean, you're in a weird spot, right? Because you don't like sell directly to the PRS. So like to get into the shooting sports and start sponsoring stuff would be weird. Cause everybody's gonna be like, I want a barrel from you guys. And you'd be like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I've talked to like, MJ Gunsmith, they're kind of local. I meant to get him a batch of barrels so that he can, you know, test them and try them. And then maybe through him, we can do something like that. Or some smaller gunsmiths that we would get some of our higher end barrels to, and then they could buy through them. So that's kind of the best route for that. Us selling direct is just really tough because we don't have the customer service back end, you know, to really support it. So I think getting to smaller gunsmiths and having them kind of build up rifles or do some, let's say they chamber them and then they sell them that way would probably be the best route. Or go beg Ken. He's got a bunch of our barrels.
Yeah. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah.
Just talked to him today. He's a busy dude now. I'll tell you that. He was busy before. He's twice as busy now.
Is he? Yeah, I got to get a hold of him. I think I owe him some 22 Creedmoor barrels.
Oh, sure. Well, cool. Man, I guess that's we hit on a lot of stuff really fast. For a guy that said he was just going to wing it, you had a lot of answers like right there, you know, and it was interesting.
Yeah. Hopefully I didn't go, you know, too far into detail on anything, you know. I'm trying to, you know, because sometimes I live in this machine tool world and I don't know how to get out of it.
Well, the thing, usually in my experience, the people listening, they're really okay with the more technical, the better, right? So I don't think you're ever going to get too deep into it, right? Because the people that are listening are the people that really want to know the ins and the outs from top to bottom, you know?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I've learned about barrel making, you know, not knowing it going into it and being a little bit nervous about the black magic or, you know, kind of the secrets. What we've learned is that using good machining practices, you can create a good barrel. And then if you kind of, and I've only done this in my own experience, but if I take those same practices and I build up a bolt gun, and I'm definitely not an expert on building guns, but if I build something up just for my own shooting or for practice or for testing, they seem to shoot, you know? So if I keep everything concentric and I get everything tight and, you know, there's good fits, good tolerancing on everything, they seem to shoot. So the cool thing is, like, if you were good at metalworking, you can make a good barrel or you can make a good firearm. It's not some secret trick that gets you to that point or some gremlin in there that makes it very, very special.
Yeah. So where do you see Vortec going? I mean, in the next 10 years, obviously you're going to keep scaling up, right? But do you see anything coming out from Vortec that's maybe different or something to watch out for?
I think the big thing is just more product line development, but still kind of always in that barrel platform. So it's always going to be barrels. You know, we don't have an FFL. That's not kind of the direction we're looking to go. And we like being kind of an OEM support. So I think growing our product line, adding to the product groups that we already have, like AR, AK, rimfire, things like that. Maybe getting into, you know, muzzle loading barrels, shotgun barrels, things like that. That's kind of the direction we're going to grow. And then obviously size, you know, that's kind of the direction we're going, not so much jumping into a different market or something like that.
For sure. You know, what's kind of crazy, I don't know hardly anything about this, but have you seen those smokeless muzzle loaders?
I have.
Yeah, like it's like a muzzle loader, but like instead of a black powder deal, like you charge it with, if you've seen them, okay, this is my 6.5 Creedmoor muzzle loader, and you like pour the gunpowder in and jam a bullet in there, it stops, and there's like a case in the bottom, yep, basically, and you shoot like a
Garrett, you know, he's a manufacturing engineer for us, right? He actually was talking to me about it, and then he brought in one of the barrels and I think the action for that, and kind of showed it to me. And actually we're starting to model that up, and hopefully we'll start making barrels for that. It's not super complicated, but it's kind of a cool design, you know. Yeah, I don't know if it's too much Skunk Works or not, you know, if it's mainstream, if it'll become mainstream, but it's pretty neat.
I think that the more people know about them, I think it's like the sweet air guns, right? Those are starting to get popular, right? Those pre-charged pneumatics, they've been getting more and more popular for the last 5-8 years, whatever it is, you know. And I think those muzzle loaders are going to be kind of the same way, because like up in Wisconsin there, or even by me, right, it opens up a whole nother season for you. And right, then it's a muzzle loader, right? So it's like out here, you can't use an optic. Can you use an optic in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, I believe you can. But like you say, a lot of other states you can't.
Yeah. But either way, now you got like a really accurate rifle, you know, I mean, you're shooting a single shot, whatever, 6.5, 30 cal, whatever it is, you know, it's like you're 30-30 or 30-06, whatever it is, you know. And I don't know. I think the more that people know about it, I think the more popular it's going to be, because let me tell you what I do not enjoy, and that's cleaning my black powder guns.
Yeah, and I've heard they're quite accurate, like oddly accurate. So, yeah, if we can make the barrels for them and kind of retrofit some stuff to get some tested, then at least we have that in our library to offer, you know. And we are actually building some muzzleloader barrels for customers now, so it's like the 45s and the 50 cal, it's not that much different than what you would do for a conventional barrel.
Faster twist rate.
Yeah, they're all actually slower, right?
I thought they were fast.
Yeah.
Aren't shotguns like a one in something crazy, like one in, oh no, you're right, one in 28 or something, you're right.
Slow. Yeah, they're kind of an off twist or whatever, but the rest of the button is the same. So and the drill and the ream is the same, so yeah, we're starting to build those as well now. So
oh, cool. Well, hey man, this is your last chance. We're coming up on our hour here. Is there anything that you want to throw out there that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we hit on a lot of good topics, and hopefully it's interesting to people.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's cool. I think it's neat to hear about another contender in the market, right? Even if you can't just go buy their stuff right now, it's just kind of interesting to hear kind of the back end of a lot of that stuff, right? A lot of the how it works. I don't know if I think most people know like how a barrel's made roughly, right? You drill a hole, put some
right.
But just to hear kind of some of the stuff that you guys are doing just to turn out a good product, I think it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And
So if anybody wants to get a hold of you, questions, comments about VorTac, anything like that, where should they go?
I mean, our website, you know, VorTac.com is the best place. You know, info@VorTac.com is a good email address as well. So we check any of the messages through our website and everything pretty regularly. And obviously we're on all the social platforms too. So
awesome. So if anybody's looking to order 100 barrels, call them up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey man, I really appreciate you taking some time to come on and talk. It's been great.
Yeah. Thanks, Kirk.
Awesome. Thank you. So with that, everybody, we're going to wrap this show up. I thought it was pretty interesting kind of getting the inside scoop on barrel making. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns for me about the show, or if you have a recommendation for another guest, that'd be Kirk@PrecisionRifleMedia.com or Elyse, @PrecisionRifleMedia.com, or you can go to our website, PrecisionRifleMedia.com, click on the Contact Us link, and that'll shoot us an email as well. Yeah, go check out VorTac. Go check out VorTac Barrels. Tell them you heard the show. Tell them you you want them to start selling direct and get them all worked up. So with that, everybody, I don't think I got anything else. So take care. Try to get to the range, and I'll talk to y'all next week. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.